When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Hello, and welcome to the Psychology Podcast with Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman, where we give you insights into the mind, brain, behavior, and creativity. Each episode will feature a new guest who will stimulate your mind and give you a greater understanding of yourself, others, and the world we live in. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into human possibility. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the podcast. Really excited to have AJ Jacobs on the show. AJ is a journalist, lecturer, human guinea pig, and author of four New York Times bestsellers that combine memoir, science, humor, and a dash of self-help. He's also editor-at-large at Esquire magazine, a commentator on NPR, and a columnist for Mental Floss magazine. He is currently helping to build a family tree of the entire world and holding the biggest family reunion ever. Have you held that biggest family reunion ever yet? AJ?
Yes, that was in June, and you were invited. You were absolutely in, because you are my cousin.
Did I miss the Facebook event invite?
maybe. It was out there, but it was fine. We'll have you next time. We had 4,000 of your other cousins there, so it was a lovely event.
Well, you could literally, you know, be my brother here. I mean, we don't look fundamentally dissimilar.
Oh, no. No, I mean, the thesis of my new project is that we're all related, but I have a feeling I'm Jewish, you're Jewish, so we're probably our brothers or, like, you know, fourth cousins.
I was referring to the model looks aspect is what I was referring to. our similarity, but I'll go with the Jewish thing.
Either one. They're kind of related.
I like that. So we have so much we could talk about. A common theme uniting a lot of things you do is that you kind of treat your life as an experiment, or at least you did for a certain chunk of your life. Do you still view that as an ongoing thing?
I do. I love that way of living, just trying new things and sometimes succeeding, sometimes failing, being okay with either one.
You were kind of like doing that before, like Tim Ferriss even, you know, said, I'm treating my life as an experiment. You were kind of like the original life as an experimenter, I guess.
That's true. And yeah. Tim and I are friends from way back. And actually, when he was writing his first book, The 4-Hour Workweek, I got a call from him. And he's like, I'm a first-time writer. I don't know what I'm doing. And he said, but he liked an article I'd written in Esquire called My Outsourced Life. Nice. Where I had hired a team of people in Bangalore, India to do everything for me. So they answered my phone, answered my email. They argued with my wife for me. They read bedtime stories to my son. So it was a fantastic experience. So he said his book was on a similar topic. Could he reprint my article? He'd give me credit, but could he just reprint it? And I said, well, he seems like he's a nice young man. He's going to sell like 14 copies. I'm not going to charge him. I'm not going to charge him to reprint my article. And then cut to a year later, and he calls me and he says, by the way, my book is number one on Amazon. And I'm like, what? How did that? But it's actually turned out to be a great thing because a lot of his fans now know me as that guy in his book.
Yeah. And I remember that story about outsourcing. Was it Bangladesh? Where was it?
Bangalore.
Oh, Bangalore. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was a very nice experience.
So let's do a little bit of a tour through the books of A.J. Jacobs. So your first one is When I First Encountered You. I was a first-year grad student at Yale working under the mentorship of Robert Sternberg, and your book came out exactly that year.
Yes, that was a book called The Know-It-All, and it was about how I decided to read the Encyclopedia Britannica from A to Z and try to learn everything in the world. So that's what I did. And I've forgotten 99% of it, maybe 99.5, but there's still some facts rattling around in my brain. So,
it's actually all there, encoded in some neuron somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You? No.
Oh, yeah. It comes out in your dreams. You know.
Oh, okay. Good to know. I mean, yeah, I remember in my conscious memory, I don't know if it's the most useful fact, like I remember that opossums have 13 nipples, that kind of thing. So I wish, you know what actually did stick though from that experience?
Yeah.
Reading all of human history, I realized that the good old days were not good. The good old days were terrible. They were disease ridden and lifespan was short, and they were smelly, they were sexist, homophobic, they were racist, it was just horrible. And our nostalgia for this time, golden time, is totally misplaced. And that makes me feel bad. For me, it's very life-affirming to realize, you know, I would not want to go back to the 1800s and get a smoke enema. That's just one example.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, it is. It's basic, you know, the phrase, blow smoke up your butt.
Yeah.
This is where it came from. It was a procedure to like cure stomach aches and whatever. And they would literally blow tobacco smoke up the butt.
That's amazing. I mean, I don't know if amazing was the right adjective for that, but it's horrifying. Did you read all the volumes of the encyclopedia? Did you literally read the whole thing?
I did. I mean, there was some skimming involved.
Okay.
I will say that.
It's not like you committed the whole thing to memory. It's not like you're Rain Man.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I laid my eyes on every single word. I'm not saying every word was processed.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So how were you fundamentally changed from that immediately after it was over? Like, you know, you said you've forgotten some things now, but how did you change through that experience?
Well, the one I mentioned before where I became much more grateful for what I do have, because seeing as the horrors of human history, that we've got it pretty good, and we tend to forget that.
Cool.
I also, during the year, I got a little carried away because I was ingesting so much knowledge that my wife started to penalize me $1 for every irrelevant fact I inserted in conversation. So, you know, she'd say, oh, I have a headache, and I would say, oh, did you know that the Bayer Aspirin Company invented heroin in 1898? And she would say, all right, that's a dollar. So after the project, I was able to cut way down on that kind of behavior.
So, okay, so that was your first book. And you emailed my advisor, Robert Sternberg, later, you know, in 2013, I think, or so, maybe.
That was one of my favorite interactions was, your advisor is the expert on intelligence.
That's right.
And so I asked him what he thought of my project of trying to get smarter by reading the encyclopedia. And he wrote back that it was one of the stupidest ideas he'd ever heard. And that just made my day. And I was able to put that in the book. Because who wants to hear like, oh, it's wonderful. You know, you don't want conflict for the book. So, which I actually agree with, you know, that is not the best way to become intelligent. And what I like about him and others like him is that they don't say intelligence is one thing, that there are different types of intelligence. And you know far better than me what he said, because I'm not smart enough to remember it. But I do remember there's different types. It's not all the IQ. The IQ is way overrated.
Well, Sternberg has a theory of, all his theories have threes or in three parts. So his theory of creativity is, you know, creative, intelligence, practical, and analytical. But then he has a theory of love, which is those three components you just mentioned as well that Helen Fisher talks about. And then he has a theory of hate, which is the negation of those three.
So what are the three parts of hate?
Oh, I don't remember off the top of my head, unfortunately, but they literally are like the opposite adjectives for what, you know, like friendship, the opposite of friendship, you know, attraction, the opposite of
interesting. Yeah,
look up his theory.
All right. Well, I hope he doesn't hate me in any of those ways.
I'm sure he doesn't. I'm trying to remember. I think I may have said something to him once, something about you, and I think he referred to you as well-intentioned.
That is such a delightfully condescending thing to say. I
can't pull it completely. Don't quote me on that. But
all right. If he did say that, then I love it.
I seem to recall something like that. You might have also said you're nice, but that's boring, right? So, okay. So, why did you do that? First of all, why did you do that book?
That was partly because there was a bit of an Oedipal component. My father started to read the encyclopedia when I was a kid, but he didn't quite finish. He made it up to the middle of the letter B around Bolivia. And so I thought, why not try to finish what he began and remove that black mark from our family history? So that was part of it. And he was a big character in the book. But part of it was just to try to figure out, what does it mean to be smart? What is the difference between knowledge and wisdom?
Oh, and that's a good one too. Yeah, Sternberg has a theory of wisdom as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which are three components. Parts. Yep.
Do you remember what those are?
Yeah, but his theory of wisdom. So one central component is your ability to balance your own personal needs versus the needs of society in general. And some people have argued Oh, good. I'm glad you like that. Some people argue that doesn't really capture what is like people tend to really think of wisdom, you know, in the everyday parlance.
Huh.
But for him, that's an important part of the balancing act.
Well, I think that that is one of the secrets to being an ethical person. I don't know if that's wisdom, but I like it. I think about it a lot because, I think for the first 30 years of my life, I was obsessed with my own personal happiness.
Oh, interesting. 30 years, you said?
Maybe 40, maybe 47. I'm 47 now. But I think I'm attempting to think about more than just my own happiness. And the irony is, I'm sure I'm not the first to point this out, that the more you think about other people's happiness, the more personally happy you are.
That's right. That's true.
Well, I feel that when you think about other people's happiness and you force yourself to do that, you're less obsessed with yourself. And so there's less pressure on you to have the perfect life because it's not just all about you.
Okay. So after you're tempted to improve your mind, you then turn to the spirit world. Why did you decide to live a year biblically?
Well, this came about because I grew up with no religion at all.
Oh,
so,
really? Were you bar mitzvahed?
Not bar mitzvahed. Oh, wow. Nothing. No seders. No. I am Jewish, as you know. But as I say in the book, I'm Jewish. But I'm Jewish in the same way the Olive Garden is Italian.
So. Do you say that in the book?
I do. No offense to the Olive Garden.
No, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's very much the watered-down cultural light version.
You're so funny.
So yeah, I knew nothing about it, but I had a kid, and I wanted to know what to teach him about my heritage. Like, what, am I missing anything by not having this, or is it all a bunch of hooey? So I thought, why not live like the Bible says, like actually follow in the footsteps, the sandal steps of our forefathers and see what improves my life and what does the opposite.
Well,
so,
tell me one from each category, like tease the viewers or the listeners. And they're not viewers, listeners.
Well, what I did was I followed every rule. So I followed the Ten Commandments and love your neighbor, but I also followed the Bible says you cannot shave the corners of your beard. I didn't know where the corners were, so I just let the whole thing grow.
I saw pictures of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I had some topiary on my chin. I spent time at airport security. That is the truth. But to your question, one thing I think that did help me that actually ties into positive psychology, which is your expertise, is just the idea of gratitude, which was in the Bible. So this is one from the helpful, and then I'll go to the not helpful. Because the Bible is very clear. It says you should be grateful for everything. Wow. And I took that very literally. So I would set every little moment in my life, I would try to get in the elevator and I'd be grateful that it didn't plummet to the basement.
Well, yeah, that's me every day. I guess I've been unknowingly living biblically.
You're
just,
great.
Just by being neurotic.
Well, yeah, and I think you are living biblically. But I would say there's a little difference between being neurotic and being grateful. Like, they're kind of the opposite. Like, focusing on the being grateful.
No, I mean, every second that goes by that I haven't died, I'm grateful I haven't died. I mean, that's
a great way to live, though.
But that's neurotic. That's not neurotic.
I don't know. You're the expert. But yeah, I actually think that is a fine way to live.
I'm going to reframe that as gratitude. You know, I used to teach, you know, when I used to be a professor in NYU, I used to joke around my students, like, I'd feel like my heart, like heartburn or something, like, everyone, I think this is it. I think it's it. And then I'd be like, wait, no, it wasn't it. Okay, I'm very grateful. Very grateful. I'm alive. You know, like, my students kind of found that hilarious. Like, every little thing, I'm like, hey, guys, I think this is it. And then, you know.
I love it. Yeah. Maybe you need to be scared every day. You need to have, like, a fake heart attack every day to remind yourself.
Well, you know what? Actually, Maslow. Are you familiar with Abraham Maslow?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've been reading a lot of his work in his unpublished journals. And he wrote about that. He called them plateau experiences. And he said, you know, we get to a point in life where not everything has to be so this kind of like transcendent, amazing sort of feeling, but we can have these plateau experiences where we just are constantly, you know, like appreciative of that moment in a way that we like think to ourselves, like, what would it be if we didn't have that person in our life? Or what would it be if, you know,
I like that.
He called it like he wishes we could kill people and have them come back and they would appreciate life so much more and stuff like
that. I love that idea. Anyway. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's it. Appreciating the really mundane moments and turning them into the sacred moments. That's one of the things I learned. And by the way, I don't think I can do it because I can't travel, but a magazine editor wanted to assign me a piece. Apparently in Korea, they have these, you can spend $10,000 and have a fake funeral for yourself.
No way.
And the idea is that once you finish the funeral, you'll be more grateful for life. So there's Maslow's idea in practice.
Wait, do you fool everyone, like friends and family, into thinking you're really dead too?
No, that would be horrible. But I mean, that's an idea if you want to pursue that.
It would be horrible. It would be horrible. But it would give you a chance to really see what people think of you.
That's so true. That is so true. Well, yeah, actually, I do remember, I think this was in the encyclopedia, P.T. Barnum faked his own death so that he could read his obituary. He wanted what it was like. So he died and then came back to life.
Amazing. That sounds so P.T. Was it P.T. Barnum?
P.T.
It sounds so P.T.
It is absolutely, yeah.
Like, I bet everyone was just like, oh, P.T. You know, like when he came back and he's like, I'm back. You're like, everyone's like, oh, P.T.
Yeah, get a new shtick, P.T. Come on.
That guy, like every day a new shtick, right?
But he was a fascinating character. I mean, in terms of helping to invent modern celebrity and reality television. He's basically doing reality television 100 years ago.
He probably would have run for president of the United States. And
excellent.
And then say, once he got elected, a sucker is born every minute. sounds familiar?
That sounds very familiar. Yes, I think that he has had a big influence on our current political state. Yes,
perhaps. Okay, so let's move on from the spirit world. Wait, did I ask you what major lessons you learned from that?
Well, the one was gratitude.
Yes.
One was that not to take the Bible completely literally.
That's the lesson you learned from taking it literally.
That's kind of an important lesson. And honestly, that was part of the motivation, is because there are millions of people around the world who take the Bible literally. So they say that the Bible says that homosexuality is evil, so therefore it is evil. And my point was, well, yeah. you're taking parts of the Bible literally, but let's take, what if you took the whole thing literally? The Bible also says that, shrimp is an abomination, so you can't eat shrimp. The Bible says you can't wear clothes of mixed fibers, so get rid of all of your polycotton blends. The Bible says stone adulterers, so that's what I did. I went out and I stoned an adulterer.
Did he end up in jail?
No, because I used very, very small stones, like pebbles.
Okay.
So that was my workaround.
So in 2012, you published Drop Dead Healthy, One Man's Humble. All these are humble quests, by the way.
Very humble.
For bodily perfection. Now, what did you do to your body between before and after? Do we have before and after pictures?
We do.
Can I Google that right now and see that?
I'm afraid you can. You don't want to, though. You don't want to see the before. It's not pleasant.
What would I type in, before and after?
Yeah, drop dead healthy.
Okay, so as we talk about this, I want to look at this on the screen. Okay.
All right.
So tell me what pounds did you go to? What else changed? Cholesterol levels changed? Things like that?
Yeah, that whole traditional. But I didn't just want to focus on that. I wanted to revamp every part of my life. So it was diet and exercise, of course, but also stress levels and sleep. And my sex life, but my posture, the way I went to the bathroom, that changed. So every aspect.
How much have you kept from that?
I have kept not everything, because if I kept everything, like, that's basically your entire life is staying healthy,
right?
If you follow everything that doctors recommend. So, but I have kept a few. I still do love the idea of walking as much as possible. So I have a treadmill. And I write on my treadmill, so I'm a treadmill desker, you know, that movement.
Yeah.
And I do eat, you know, I'm not crazy about it, but I try to not eat processed foods. One little good heuristic, rule of thumb is eat from the fridge, not from the cabinet, because the fridge has the real food that rots. Anything that rots is good for you. So, I do try to stay away from my cabinet.
How much weight did you lose?
I think I lost like 25 pounds, so nothing crazy.
How tall are you?
I am about 5'11". But yeah.
Because you're looking at the before picture and you don't, I mean, you stuck your stomach out, but you still look skinny. To me, you look skinny. I mean, even before.
Well, you're nice to say. But no, I was, my wife called me like 4 months pregnant. I was skinny fat, so I looked like a snake that has swallowed
a
goat.
Right. You were skinny, but you looked like you swallowed. That's exactly right. Exactly what you just said. Yeah.
It's like a big bell curve right in the middle of the stomach.
Absolutely. But what a great thing. I mean, by doing all these things, you're doing self-improvement. What a great excuse to improve yourself.
Yeah. And I don't keep, that's the idea, is I try all these things and some improve my life, some make my life much more miserable. But then after the book, I can get rid of the ones that make my life miserable.
But you are keeping some of the healthy habits.
Oh, yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I also, there are studies about alcohol, one drink a day is correlated to a longer life. Now, we know correlation doesn't imply causation, but still, I like the correlation. So I have at least one drink a day.
Wow. Oh, well, that's good. A good justification there.
Yes, that is part of it.
So now I'm browsing Google Images pictures of you, and Justin Bieber just popped up. I don't know why that happened.
I think I did once write a tweet about him and got some angry tweets from his followers. I try to remain very positive. That was one of the lessons of the Bible book. But sometimes,
you're only human.
I'm only human. I had to make some comment from love, from a position of love about Justin Bieber.
Exactly. Okay, so let's move on to not your latest book, but a book that many people may not be aware of, which I loved.
Hmm.
And that it was What It Feels Like.
Wow, I'm impressed.
I bought it for literally a penny used on Amazon. I'm just being honest.
I love your honesty.
About 5-6 years ago in New York, and I devoured it because I thought, wow. I don't know, you're probably not going to believe me, but before I saw that book, I had thought to myself, how cool it'd be to do a book where I like go around and ask people like what it's like to do I thought it would be such a cool idea. And then I saw that book. I wasn't in the least like AJ Jacobs, you know, like I was just like so excited that you did it and that like that someone did it, you know?
Well, there's like hundreds of more experiences, so feel free to do a follow-up.
Because I just always think to myself, you know, like I don't want to really do some of those things, but I would love to know what I'm missing out on.
Right. It is fascinating. It's very voyeuristic, but it's a wonderful, as you say, it's wonderful to see what it really is like. And they ranged from the most extreme experiences, and they could be either good or they could be bad. So what it feels like to be in an avalanche, what it feels like to be shot, to walk on the moon.
Shot in the head, if I remember correctly.
Shot in the head. Yeah. That is right. Yeah. It doesn't feel great, apparently. It doesn't
no.
feel. One that I loved, I still think about all the time, is what it feels like to be almost 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
This basketball player who is like 7'9". And I just loved it because he said that it's a dirty world up there. Like when you look at the top of people's fridges that they never clean and the ledges over doorways. And I just love that because it's like something you'd never think about. But yeah, of course, he's seeing the world from a totally different point of view. And it's dirty.
That's so funny. Yeah, no, that's a good one. I'm trying to remember if any other one stuck out to me. Yeah, this thing of winning the lottery, that stuck out.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think it didn't work out so well for him, which I think is a...
Well, that was consistent with a lot of positive psychology. Like, we returned to baseline, you know?
Right, yeah. Right.
But also, everyone wants... Didn't he say something like, everyone just wants something from me?
Yes. Yeah. I spend way too much time thinking about what I would do if I won the lottery. And I think I figured it out.
What is it?
Well, I would say right up front, I am keeping 10%, and the rest, the 90%, is going into a charitable foundation run by this guy. And then I'd hire someone like you. I'll hire you to run it so that no one can ask me for money. I'm
right.
Like, they ask me for money. I'm like, no, I don't have any control over it. This guy, go talk to this guy.
Brilliant.
And
now
then
you'd start a foundation.
Yeah, a foundation.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't think of that word, but yes. The foundation. And then, like, you could enjoy your 10%.
Right.
Without having feeling guilt or having people, you know, asking you for it.
You know, I just got another thought. And as I hear, like, someone, like, basically, like, stealing a car outside your window or something. Was this New York City?
Yeah, it's real life. Or maybe it's just sound effects. I have a...
It sounded like someone smashing open the window and then like the alarm going off and like driving away. Like
that's hilarious.
All the sounds.
I have my headphones on, so I can't even hear. Oh, yeah. No, I hear it now. I hear it now. Well, yeah. I wanted to give the audience like some background environment. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about your next book. Which is your newest book. It's not out yet, correct?
That's right. I am writing it as we speak.
Really? As we speak? And you're on a treadmill as well? Right
yeah. I like to... you know what I often fantasize about is that dolphins sleep with half their brain at a time so they can still function while they're sleeping. So that's been my fantasy forever, is like to be able to sleep and still write my books. But that hasn't happened.
That sounds amazing.
Wouldn't that
I
be
just
nice?
Love sleeping. So your new book is about how we're all related.
That's right. This is, and this one started because I got about 2 years ago, I got an email from this guy and he said, "You don't know me, but I'm your 12th cousin."
Wow.
And of course, I thought the next line's going to be, "Here's my bank account in Nigeria. Please send $10,000 immediately." But he didn't, you know, he was for real. And he's part of this group of people who are building a family tree of the entire world. It's just a wild revolution happening. And it's happening because of DNA testing. It's happening because of the internet, where people are combining their trees, sort of like a Wikipedia version of family trees, where millions are working on it at the same time. So, and I love it. So I'm on the biggest tree, which is right now about 105 million people, and I'm related to, I can see how I'm related to almost anyone in the world. Like Barack Obama. He is my fifth great aunt's husband's brother's wife's seventh great nephew. So,
are you serious? How did you memorize that?
Yeah, that's the one I memorized. I can't memorize them all. But
How are you related to Steven Pinker?
I am. I'm actually very close to Steven Pinker because we both did a DNA test. So I think we're about third or fourth cousins.
Wow. He just recently did one of our imagination retreats.
Did he?
Yeah. We'll be releasing a video about that soon. But
I want to watch that.
Yeah. I'll tell you when it's up. But that's cool. You know, there's that whole Jewish thing there.
Yeah, that makes it easier. But even non-Jews.
Barbara Bush. What about Barbara Bush?
Barbara Bush is my relative for sure. I can't remember our exact. I can look it up right now if you want. But yeah, we're all the farthest, according to an MIT study, the farthest cousin you have on Earth by blood is about a 70th cousin. So we share 99.9% of our DNA. And that's kind of the big message, is that we are so remarkably similar that this tribal mentality we have is kind of crazy, and that there is no us versus them. It's just us. It's just us. That's it.
So I like that, and I like the spirit of that. But why is it that even with such genetic similarity, even that 1% of genetic variation causes...
0.1%.
How is it that 0.1% of differences causes some seemingly dramatically different personality traits from like Stalin to Mother Teresa? Like, explain that for me.
That is a great point. Yes, they are maybe not. Stalin is part of the family, but maybe he didn't realize it. I think if we had just showed him how similar he was, then maybe he would have acted a little better. And maybe not, but I actually think, you know, it's not going to cure all racism and war. There's still going to be tribalism, but I do think that it might nudge us in the right direction. And I'm not alone in this. There's one of my real cousins. There's a behavioral economist and professor named Cass Sunstein. Do you know Cass?
I do, and we're trying to get him to be actually in one of our retreats as well.
Oh, he would be fantastic. Like, he's a genius. But anyway, he came up with this idea of the family bias, where you do treat people who you know are family, even if they're distant relatives, you treat them better than you treat a stranger. So the idea would be to hijack this family bias and apply it to everyone in the world. But you're right, it's not going to solve everything. You're still going to have psychotics like Stalin. It's not going to hurt. It's going to hopefully...
Not psychotics, you mean psychopaths.
That is interesting. What is a psychotic?
Psychotic, that's to do with more schizophrenia. Those are people who have hallucinations.
Got it.
But it's very...
What's the difference between psychopath and sociopath?
Now, that's a good question. And a lot of that has to do with just how the term has been used. You know, vernacular, sociopath is not used in modern day science anymore. It's psychopath because it's acknowledged that a psychopath is who they are as a mix of nature and nurture. The sociopath idea is an old idea that there are these people that strictly because they were abused, you know, they grew up to be who they are, you know, or because of horrible experiences. But we really have increased our knowledge of psychopaths at this point. By the way, I recommend those who are interested in this, listeners, to listen to the podcast I do with Ken Keel called What Is It Like to Be a Psychopath?
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. I thought I'd plug that. I talk about everything, that whole topic with him in that
really?
Podcast. Yeah.
Wow. All right. I'm going to go listen.
Awesome. Yeah. And he's like the world's leading expert on the neuroscience of psychopathy and stuff.
That's fascinating. Now, can we solve, do you think, if humans survive for 500 years, will we be able to rewire the brain so that anyone who is born with psychopathic tendencies will be able to be rewired and be just fine?
Well, that's a broader question about whether or not we can get to the point where we can use technologies to change traits that we have. So not just psychopathy. Like, once we crack the nut of being able to change traits, then that opens it up. We can include psychopathy in that, right?
So right.
That's an interesting question. And we're already doing that. We've already found what do you think SSRIs are doing? You know,
right.
Or like at a smaller scale, not as dramatically, but there's a technique called TDSC where you can stimulate the brain and shut off half the brain basically. And it supposedly cures depression, you know, and
now which one is that? Is that the transcranial?
TDSC, transcranial direct stimulation. Yeah.
Yeah. And is that real? Does that have science behind
it? Yeah, we're funding a project right now. We get with $250,000 to use TDSC to see if people were more creative afterwards.
Now, do you do it yourself?
I've never tried it. No, I've never tried it.
What would be the downside? It sounds like if
no, there is no doubt. I would try it. It's non-invasive. It's not long-lasting. I certainly would try it. And the idea is that maybe someday that it would be like a thinking cap you could buy at Walmart or something.
I love it. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'm in.
Cool. So this new book, I'm in terms of buying that book. It sounds absolutely fascinating. And do you have a title for it yet?
It's tentatively called It's All Relative. And, yeah, I know.
That's good.
I'm not a big pun man, fan, but
one you know. Man's humble quest to what?
I unite the world in one big family. So it'll be about that, but it'll also be about, you know, the idea we're all one family, but also family structures. Like, is there an ideal family structure? I just spent a couple of days hanging out with Polyamory Support Group of New York, which is this idea of having multiple parents and multiple kids, like sort of a group family. And is that better, worse, the same?
That sounds complicated.
Well, you know what? They say it's the hardest part is the logistics. Like, you have to seriously know your Google Calendar. Like, if you've got multiple lovers, like, you know, that's where it gets complicated.
If you have multiple lovers, it's not as complicated if it's a family, is what you're saying?
No, it is definitely as complicated. Because, yeah, you know, there's even the terminology. Like, you've got mom and dad, but then there's meemaw and poppy and dad. So everyone has their own name. Yeah.
I mean, what's the fun in having such a complicated family situation where you can barely even, like, have meaning in one person?
Well, I am not their spokesman.
That's true.
But I will say, what I think they would say is, that it takes a village, you know, the more the merrier, and the more love in the house, the better. The more people you have guiding you, the better. Why arbitrarily just choose two people to raise you when you can have seven?
Okay.
Okay.
Let's just move on. Let's just move on from that.
Okay. You're not sold.
Fair enough. Okay, cool. So is there anything else, you know, we can conclude this. You've been so gracious with your time, and I really enjoy chatting with you, AJ.
We could
go on and on.
I know it's late, so that I feel I'm rambling, but you didn't. You were worried that you would ramble, but you didn't. You were sharp.
Well, thanks, but I found you non-rambling. I enjoyed it. Is there anything we kind of did a tour of AJ Jacobs and your books and stuff. Is there anything else you want to add at this point about what you're currently working on or anything?
I'm trying to think. No, I don't think so. I wrote, let's see, my latest piece in Esquire was about how I was in the hospital. I tripped and fell and fell on my face like an idiot. But the big lesson from my stay at the hospital was to be a little more proactive. Because they put you in that hospital gown that barely covers your butt. And I found it so dehumanizing. And I said, do I have to put this on? And they're like, well, it's strongly recommended. And I was like, yeah, but legally, do I have to put it on? And they're like, well, no, we can't make you. And I was like, great. And I wore my sweatshirt and I wore my sweatpants and I felt 100 times better. And there's a movement, it turns out, of doctors who say, got to get rid of the hospital gown for most patients. Some patients need it because they need the doctors need immediate access to their back or whatever. But for a lot of patients, you don't need it and you feel so much better. So that's...
Is there a hashtag for that?
No, but let's start one. Ditch the gown.
Ditch the gown. But anyway, AJ, it was absolutely delightful talking to you today. Thank you.
I loved it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Psychology Podcast with Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman. I hope you found this episode just as thought-provoking and interesting as I did. If you'd like to read the show notes for this episode or hear past episodes, you can visit thepsychologypodcast.com.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.